Okay, we're on the air. This is Learning Together on a Sunday. Well, it's kind of evening here in Al Ain, UAE. And this is the 24th of November, 2013. And we've got with us Andy Kropa, who is a photographer. I can't remember where you live, Andy. What city do you live in?
I live in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, okay. So he's a photographer in New York, and he was kind of invited here by Alex Hayes, who is unfortunately not able to join us because he's broken his shoulder. So it looks like, though, we've got a really nice crowd. We've got someone in the same continent as Alexander. We've got Michael Coughlin here, and Claire is waving. Claire Braden Siskin, who is in Chandigarh, India. And Jim Buckingham is over there adjusting his glasses, and he's here in the United Arab Emirates. And Andy is there in Brooklyn, and Andy's going to talk to us about sort of hacking Alzheimer's. I presume it's something about Google Glass and how this helps enhance cognitive abilities. And, well, you might as well take it from there, Andy.
Sure. So thank you very much for hosting this hangout together. Sorry that we won't have Alex today, but if he joins later, that would be great. To give you some background, I am a photographer, so I work in a visual medium. 2 years ago, I lost my own mother to Alzheimer's disease. And the way the project has come about is, I began to think of ways of things that could have been helpful on her own journey to act as assistant devices, helping with problems where she might have problems with, following conversations, even getting lost within her own neighborhood, and needing things like reminders for memory that was failing. So, and if you look at the reasons that we record things and make recordings, it's in order to be able to remember them and to preserve them. So if, just from a logical sense, if you're having trouble remembering, then it would make sense that you might want to record much more. And what's happening with technology, as we know now, is that the price of doing this, the ability to do this, is getting much easier. So with Hacking Alzheimer's is the name of a group I've started, so I will post links to, and would appreciate anyone who'd like to join, where we're hosting discussions on Google Plus. The idea is to think about kind of technological workarounds that can give someone an extra ability that they might be lacking through their own, mental impairments. Right now it's kind of very much conceptual. We are thinking of how Google Glass, which I'm part of the Glass Explorers program, so I can just put these on for a second here. Not that they're doing anything at the moment. But the idea of having a camera that's so close to your point of vision, to your eye, could the type of app that we're focused on developing can recreate this daily perspective, kind of keep a log of where you've been, what you've done, and then be able to prompt those at particular times, and in a way that would be simple enough, hopefully, for a person with a mild impairment to be able to use that themselves and make use of that themselves. So we're talking about sort of a specific type of case. There's the progression of Alzheimer's, obviously, is degenerative disease. So at a certain point, I don't think there's really anything that's going to help or actually stop or reverse that process. Although, you know, the greatest hope would be for a medical type of cure. So of course, this is not envisioned as kind of a substitute or a cure-all for any type of condition, but rather as a way to improve the quality of life for a person earlier on in the stages of development, to be able to sort of take more control, remain independent, and in that way possibly forestall some of the effects, put off some of the anxieties that, you know, can later then lead to depression and family, you know, dysfunctions that can develop, alleviate some burdens from caregivers that, you know, may get frustrated with the constant need to give reminders, to always be there, you know, that's kind of in a nutshell what Alex and I have been discussing. There's different directions that this could possibly go, but we're looking for suggestions and inputs. You know, would like to know what people think about this idea.
Yeah, it's really interesting. When I had only the vaguest idea of, but although I've been following Alex quite a lot, I really appreciate his work. He's a, and so I'm familiar with. I mean, he's introduced us to a lot of life loggers and. Stephen Mann, for example. He went to this. Perhaps you met him at the conference in Toronto, the IEEE. Did you meet him?
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you could maybe tell us a little bit about that. But I'm sure you got a lot of ideas there. But I'm kind of interested to know if there's been if it's effective or how, you know, does it actually work, or do you have any indication that it works, that someone can function using glass and recall? Does that actually work? Is it more than just an idea?
Yeah, I mean, as we know, you know, glass is a very early technology. So, you know, I've just started using mine in July of this year, and I'm not someone who can program my own applications, so that's something. So this particular case isn't tested, but we know with life logging, which is started in the early 90s. Although there's been other instances before this, but the main start of this came with Microsoft and the SenseCam. Which is a small camera worn about the neck on a lanyard, and that was programmed to take still images every 5 or 10 seconds that could later then be replayed in kind of a movie format, kind of like a jumpy movie like you used to see in the in the early days of film, And this was developed and has been shown to be effective for people that have memory recall issues. A lot of the cases were done with certain types of amnesia, which has similar effects to Alzheimer's. From my perspective, is using the visual medium, a photography, is you're able to much more quickly grasp a situation. You know, it's not written out or described or spoken about, which is, you know, the way that, that we currently, if we're trying to prompt someone to remember a particular situation who's having trouble with doing that, and we're trying to describe that, I think, you know, a lot gets lost in the words, and, you know, maybe it's not as clear. But with seeing a photograph or a video representation, I think that can become much more clear, much more quickly. And I think that's something, you know, we kind of inherently know from just having pictures around us and looking at pictures and becoming sort of a visual society as we are now. I think that, you know, the exciting thing about glass is really the point of view perspective, and how I think that could be really an advancement from the other cameras that are out there, such as SenseCam, which is now, which morphed into a company, or was sold to a company, Vicon. Now that's kind of morphed into the Autographer camera. There's another camera that was called Mimoto, and now they've changed their name just to Narrative. That's a startup company funded by Kickstarter. But these are a question of perspective. So these are worn, you know, either right up here near your neck or on a chain. It gives almost sort of a third person point of view where I think a eye-mounted camera closer to the eye can connect someone a little bit better to what they've actually seen, and it could actually be recognized as something that is coming from their own first person, you know, point of view experience. So I think that's the possibility with glass, and there are other products out there that could ultimately function better than glass. I know Google has placed some kind of restrictions on you know, on the ability of the camera. This is, you know, revolves around a lot of the privacy concerns that have developed from outside this development process that have kind of, you know, there's kind of a scare, I guess, around glass being out there and what it can do in terms of privacy and in our public life. And, you know, they're referred to like Steve Mann and his articles on surveillance, which is a term he came up with, so which is rather than having cameras above us surveilling us, is the cameras are coming from all around us, and we're
from us,
know, each other. So that's definitely something we could talk about as well. It's a very fascinating concept, but. But if we, you know, did live in a world, you know, where that was sort of a reality, that we, you know, could be able to just access something we saw earlier in the day, you know, I think that would be an improvement over the idea of other people watching us. You know, we'd have our own sort of autonomy over what we've seen and experienced, and be able to re-access that later, which also relates to, you know, something I'm interested in the world of photography, which is the idea of just being able to collect and maintain your experiences, without sort of the intention or the thought beforehand of here's something I want to photograph, and here's a memory I want to keep, because that oftentimes that's one of the problems is we're not quite sure what's going to be a useful memory while it's happening. So, and I see this comment from Michael, serendipity, which some of the cameras, like autographer, narrative, / Miimoto, this is what they're relying on, is these unexpected moments, the things that you weren't able to capture before because you're kind of sitting there with your finger on the button waiting for something to happen. Well, you know, what if it was just there and you could go back and get it later? So I definitely think this would help someone in the case of a memory problem, but companies that have taken like the SenseCam use and are now trying to apply it to more of a consumer, more of a you know, just a product that can be fun to use, just record life as a camera. So I think that's also fascinating and a good thing to kind of
Yeah, I would like to point out that what you just discussed has opened all kinds of worms that are just jumping out all over. This is going to be an interesting conversation. But rather than plunge in with my questions right away, I'd like to tell people I muted everybody at the beginning because I heard background noise, and that's a good technique for if you mute and it stops and you've identified it, but I don't think I did, so I don't think it was really a problem. But I can't unmute you in Google Hangout. You have to unmute yourself. But you're welcome to do that. And Jim has had a couple of questions. I think one of them you just answered about, he asked, is Google Glass operational for you? I know that you've got Glass on, you mentioned a special program, so Glass is not really available right now to just anybody. That's correct?
That's right. They're doing a beta test Explorers program still. So the way, I guess I could just talk briefly about the way, you know, I was able to get Glass. They announced in February that this is kind of a product that is coming out. People have been talking about it and things like that, but they announced on their page that they're accepting applications to you know, have the honor of paying Google their, you know, $1,500 U.S. fee for purchasing an early set. Hopefully the price will come down to somewhere around $300 or $400, which I think would make it quite useful for many people. But they invited people to, using the hashtag if I had glass, go to Google Plus or Twitter and post your kind of idea or what you would like to do with glass. So I did mention you know, my family history and how I think it could be useful for people with Alzheimer's and other types of dementia, and say I was really interested in working on that. And then a few months later, I got a reply from the Glass team that they'd like to accept me to the Explorers program, and it was a few months after that I was able to go pick up and you know, learn a little bit from a Glass guide, I suppose. There's a lot of different a lot of nomenclature developed around this product, so a Glass guide showed me how to set it up and use it, and then since then I've you know, had that to play with. So but yes, and now what's happening is they're expanding that Explorers program and to a bigger group. So I'm not sure how many thousands it's growing to now, but then the next step will be, of course, releasing it on the market, and you know, we'll see sometime next year possibly, and then we'll kind of have to see how it takes off and who it's best suited for. You know, I know when I speak about this idea, the question that comes up kind of first most often is how do you convince people that this is something to wear, or how do you have people remember to even put the glasses on if they're enabled with an app that's recording kind of a life logging function. And for now, the battery will not really support video. I don't think you can get a half an hour to an hour of video before the battery starts to go, and so that's not quite useful. I'm not so concerned about how or if it can be done, because I think we're really at a point of inflection where that is going to be something that's possible. So what I think the big question is what's the interface going to be? How do you recall something? Cathal Gurren, who was also at the ISETS conference in Toronto and has worked with the SenseCam ever since the beginning, since Gordon Bell at Microsoft, brought this, led the team that brought this about. He works a lot on how do you make all this data useful, all this visual information you've collected and whatever life logging data you have, and how do you then recover the information that you need in a timely fashion? And of course, that's a big question just in terms of internet search computer learning, and it gets a bit more developed when you're talking about visual information, because that's not, that's going to have to be tagged and with some kind of text in order to make it searchable. I'm not sure if I've gotten a little off the topic of that original question.
Oh, I have several questions. Well, let's welcome Nina Liakos, who's just joined us. And I think I pronounced it correctly that time.
Nina?
Yeah, and she's in New Jersey. And let's see. Well, I've got several questions. Maybe I'll just state the question so we'll come back to them at some point. One of them is, gosh, that's neat. What are you doing with Google Glass now? What have you been doing since you've had it? Second thing, how would you envision that interface? And third thing, boy, I'd love to talk about some of the surveillance issues. And another thing I might say is, I guess you don't have to really wear it. You could just, this could be a wearable technology that you could, like the people who wear these alert systems around their necks in their homes, Of course, I know my mother was resistant to even that. And the last thing is the NSA is working on how to parse all that data that they're collecting. So there's lots of issues to talk about. And then, but I'd also like to say, Jim, you've put a question in the chat. Maybe you'd like to come up and ask your question, because we want to bring some other voices into this. And if Jim doesn't do that, well, his question is, he wants to know about, he's asking if you're familiar with the research on integrating technology into day-to-day living for the elderly that's being done in Oregon at the Oregon Center for Aging and Technology. Are you familiar with that? And if not, he can ask you about it.
I'm not familiar, so I'd really like to hear about it more.
I'm not sure you can hear me. I only picked up on this a few weeks ago. It was on a BBC program frequently aired here in this part of the world called Horizons. And on that program, they were looking at, I can't remember what the broader topic was, but they were looking at data, and they were looking at the elderly population growth in the Western world and the Eastern world. And to make a long story short, they got to looking at how populations are aging in different parts of the world, but it was moving much, much faster in the East. Yeah, that's it, Michael. You've got it. Did you see the program, Michael? Yeah, the focus on Holland was on creating communities for Alzheimer's patients that were as close to normal as possibly could, and as a result, they noticed differences in the amount of drug usage that was required and the level of happiness of patients, et cetera, was really, really interesting. But the second part of it was also looking at how the University of Oregon was doing studies on monitoring the elderly's movements in a, for instance, in their apartment by setting up sensors throughout the apartment, and by doing so, picking up on common patterns of the elder of a particular elderly person, and then and being able to monitor them with this really interesting log. And then the moment they identified that there was a deviation from that routine, a significant deviation from that routine, they would then go on to look at what, go in and ask or monitor the patient, the elderly person, to see if it was related to an onset to memory loss or a physical ailment, some sort of something coming in interrupting them. I can't hear. Oh, okay, maybe you can't hear me. Does that make any sense?
We can hear you fine, Jim. Oh, okay. Nina says she can't hear me.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I can give you the link here, Andy. You really should look at it. It looks to me like this sort of thing that you're suggesting here would tie in really, 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 really well with what they're trying to do, which is, in fact, monitor the elderly and help extend the length of time that they can have where they're self-sufficient, where they're independent. And that's essentially what you're talking about here, is at least my understanding of it. By having the surveillance, the monitoring, and improving recall about things that they've done before, that will encourage them to continue to be independent. Is that correct take?
Can I just disperse something before Andy comments?
Sure.
Because I think it follows the same train. Sure. And the music bit, it may have been the same program, Jim. I just was taken by the music part of it, where they, and something that I saw which was just unforgettable, a guy that was sitting there pretty much in a vegetative state. They put headphones on him and they started to play some music, and this guy just came alive and he just said, "That's jazz." And they said, "Do you know who's playing?" He named the musician, he named the concert, he named the date, and he just went into this rave about all of the things that this music triggered. So it was along this same path of bringing back stuff and enabling people to relate through music in a way that they hadn't been able to do. So it's along the same lines of using media to trigger memories to bring people back to something like the person they were.
Yeah. This was a little bit different, but similar.
No, but thank you for pointing us over to this link, and that really is the key, is being able to provide a new sense of independence, you know, for the person themselves, but also, you know, I should mention for the people that are there to look after them. So if you think about a situation of like a nursing home, and obviously there's surveillance cameras there now, but you know, they might be mounted at the top of a wall somewhere in a room, so you can tell, say, if someone has left the room and wandered away and you can't find them. But you know, if you can imagine that person has a camera, that they're streaming their own experience out to the person that's meant to be minding them, that, you know, that's a much more useful situation. They're going to be able to see like where the person's going, and maybe it's not even necessary to go and run after them. Maybe, you know, if they can see their field of view and what they're doing and they're not causing any harm, then maybe it's okay to let someone walk around and have that feeling of not being, you know, caged in, which is something that's going to happen, you know, when a person is at that level of needing to be watched around the clock. So, you know, I think that could be very useful for both parties that are kind of involved in this situation. And you know, I'd like to talk about, you know, this idea of music and as like a prompt, and images as a prompt for coming up with memory, and you know, something that I would see as possible is you know, it's obviously you'd want a person's sort of life-logging experience to be sort of a controlled or a private record, but for, you know, people that are trusted to be caretakers and things like that, you know, this can be shared, and it can be something that can inform, you know, the loved one or the professional caregiver of what's happening in a patient's own experience, and then being able to, you know, in a sense, they become like a surrogate memory bank after, you know, they become familiar enough with maybe who a person has talked to during the day, what they've done, and they'd be better able to provide these types of prompts that would help someone. And so it would be a way of reducing kind of this frustration level that you're going to have, which, you know, leads to just a lot of emotional, you know, a lot of emotional tension in the situation. So, and again, I just, you know, want to stress, it's like, you know, the ideal hope would be like, in a few years, there's a breakthrough and they discover this is a way to prevent Alzheimer's and dementia from ever happening again. But in the meantime, I think there's a way to improve, you know, just make lives better and alleviate some of the dire kind of interpersonal challenges that come out of this feeling of not being independent anymore and not having control over your own experience any longer. I'm sorry, I'm just looking over at the side to see.
How did people respond to you when they acknowledge or they recognized Google Glass?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, the more that I kind of wear it around, there's been times that I even forget that I have it on, and I think it's less noticed than I definitely expected it to be. You know, every time there'll be one or two people that will come up and are kind of interested and want to see it and know about it, but I think there's like not a lot of awareness of that the product's out there among, you know, the big majority of the population. So it's still kind of, you know, you need to be sort of in the loop or following technology to really even know about it. So
what kind of support does Google provide you in the use of the device? Are they simply handing it over to you and then asking you to complete a log, or are they pretty much hands off on it?
No, they're not asking anything of me. You know, there are people that are available to sort of answer questions. You know, it might take a day or two to hear back. And they have sponsored some meetups and things like that too. They actually, here in New York, they have sort of it's not really a store, but it's an area where I actually went to pick them up, and so they posted an event there that I've been to, and there's of course the different G Plus communities that have kind of come up on their own.
Have you met anybody on the street that's also wearing the device?
Yes, I have seen people before, once or twice. So that, you know, there's not that many around right now. But it's you know, if people haven't seen it too much, there's. Looks kind of like glasses, but there's like a battery unit back here and a speaker for you here, and then this part is a touchpad device that allows you to control the different functions, which are allowing you to take a picture. You can tap and say, okay, glass, Google a certain topic. You know, with speech recognition, which isn't wonderful, you know. you come up with some funny Google searches if it doesn't quite recognize what you're saying. And then one thing useful is giving directions. You know, so another thing that I'd be interested in including in like an app is a way for a person to be directed home, you know, through some sort of guidance, because, you know, right here is a screen that sort of shows up almost like a television screen, but sort of just floating a little bit off your eye, if you can imagine. With, you know, that's where the information is displayed.
What's been the most intriguing aspect of wearing Google Glasses for you so far?
For me so far, well, so as a photographer, I was of course very interested in figuring out how the camera could be used, and it's. Of course, the camera is quite similar to anyone that's on a smartphone. Now, just the, you know, physical hardware of it. But the main difference is, like, when you take a picture, you're not able to frame or compose it or see what's going on. So that's, you know, as someone that's spent so much time looking through a viewfinder trying to make every part of the frame really perfect before I take a picture, that's like a new experience. And
so are you able to take a series of shots very quickly with it, or?
Well, there is a delay, you know, especially if you're using the voice command, which is okay, glass, take a picture, and then there'll be a little second, and then I'll shoot. So that, you know, that's also something that's very different. You know, when you're used to kind of rapid fire photography. But then Google issues updates once a month, and so that's one of the issues that lag I've noticed has been shortening and shortening to where it's more immediate. And then on the top there's a button that's just acts as a shutter that you can just press down. But when we get back to that comment of serendipity, I mean, there's a lot of that going on too. Because you don't actually see what you're photographing until it's done, and then you just kind of see it on the screen, but not really. You know, you can't sit there like you can on a smartphone and zoom in on it and see all the different areas. So all my other cameras like work a lot better. But the one thing that I've started doing, just because this is the way that you could, the only way that I really could figure to signify that pictures are made from a Google Glass rather than another camera, is to include my own hands within the picture, both of my hands, because there's no other camera that really lets you do something like that. So
yeah, that's true.
Got a link of just a photo series I've been doing separately as something kind of fun to do. And it's a series I call Look Ma No Hands.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Cool.
So my experience has been setting up a lot of these pictures, which are sort of like, you know, life logging pictures, but as a way to kind of explore that concept of life logging, and as a way of not just being a photographer out looking at the world, but someone participating in the world, and then being able to record these little vignettes of that. So.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that being really interesting, fascinating to explore, because typically you're a passive observer in taking a photograph, but now you can be more actively involved in taking pictures at the same time.
Yeah, and so I think that's something that's exciting for me too, is like, you know, I can be a photographer, but I can be a person who's there and in the moment, and not this, you know, there's less of a separation, because you're not really putting a big physical device in front of your face every time you want to take a picture, and you know, I can imagine a world where photography is kind of seamless. I mean, maybe that's not such a great thing, you know, thinking about having a career as you know, taking pictures, but...
Well, I see your role as a photographer, or the role of photographer changing into more of a curator again.
Where sure. You're
being much more selective about or capturing moments or identifying moments that most of us would probably overlook.
Yeah, and I think even getting back to the idea of a memory aid, which we've been talking about, you know, there's a space for someone that in sort of a curation role. So, you know, maybe the technology isn't going to be advanced enough to, you know, to kind of know what you might be thinking about, what you might be trying to remember, but you know, someone out there could function as an editor to kind of present, you know, to a person with a memory impairment, hey, here's a little look back at what you did today, and here's the moments that, you know, a person sort of familiar with your own life has figured out and helped out. So, you know, either a person at the care facility, you know, a loved one. I think that's you know, that's a direction we've been exploring. Is like, not that technology is going to step in and do all these things, but that it can enable this new type of communication between the, you know, the person that might be out wearing the camera, just collecting this all day long, and then, but then you'd have an intermediary to come in and say, you know, here are some things that, might have been important. And
I'm intrigued by the thought that I could be, as a caregiver to somebody older than myself, I could be reviewing what's happened in the day by having access to whatever their feed is at late in the day, or having it as a conversation starter, something to talk about when I go and visit somebody who's elderly and has one of these devices. I think that could be a really, really positive thing to do.
Yeah, for sure. So really the question for me is less about, you know, how do you collect this? How do you collect these videos, photos, whatever you're going to have? Because I think that's something that can be done now, that's being done and has been done for a while. So the question I'm really trying to explore is, like, you know, what is this interface? How is it most effective? How is it seamless, easy? You know, and I think it is, you know, pretty simple. It's a fast forward, rewind, pause that you have on any type of VCR or TV set. And so I think a lot of people, even with, you know, it needs to be at the level of simplicity that a person even with a disability is able to sit there and operate it themselves.
Well, it could very well be that the elderly would not operate it. Actually, it may be because of the memory requirements there. I'm not sure. I'm just thinking out loud here. But I'm just looking at the time. I'm going to have to skid here, but I'm really thankful for you taking the time to share it, certainly with me, and I'm sure with the rest of us here. I got to scram. But
of
I
course.
Would be intrigued to find out where you go with this in, say, 6 months' time, and whether or not you do actually check in with the center in Oregon there to see if, in fact, that you're on the same wavelength, or you can work something in conjunction with them. Good
sure.
luck with it.
Sure, and this link here is to join the community, so invite yourself and anyone else here listening to, you know, go ahead and...
Okay, we'll do.
And we'll be posting, you know, there's a lot of articles of things in the news and other developments, so that's definitely the best way to keep track. So,
okay, I'm going to try and close here without getting. You've put that in the chat section, have you?
A link, yeah. Plus Google Plus community, then with a bunch of numbers, but I think it's also on the Learning Together page.
Okay, I'll catch it.
Not the event, so. Or it should
great.
Be.
Pleasure meeting you.
Thank you very much.
It is on the Learning Together page, that link, and I'll put the link to your Tumblr in there as well. I'm sorry, my first computer just went brrrr, crashed and burned. I'm bringing it back up now, but I then started the Hangout on a netbook, and that was didn't manage it, so I grabbed another computer that was lying around, and now I'm back. Oh, here goes the computer that crashed. Okay, that's a good sign. I wondered if you got around to some of the questions I'd asked earlier, two of them in particular. I'm sorry if you covered some of this while I was out of the picture, but the answer to Clara's question is I have enough, apparently. But anyway, what have you been doing with your Google Glass since you got it? Because I'm sure you've been playing around with it a little bit. And the second thing is, how would you describe the app that you would have someone, I mean, what sort of How would it look to the person who's wearing the glass, and would they have to control it, or how do they do that? How do you envisage it? You probably, because you've got the glasses, you probably know more, about. I mean, you've described what it does, but you know, what would the interface be like to such a person?
Right. So, for the first question, I posted on the side of the chat, which is the Tumblr. My Tumblr page is kind of what I've been personally doing with the glasses, doing a little photography project. Yeah. That one.
No, so, I did bring that up.
So I guess I suppose it's a little tongue in cheek, but interested in. It's almost kind of based on a life logging experience, and had a little conversation. Before with James. So, for the second question, talking about how the app would actually appear to the user, I think it would be a very passive kind of ambient experience, and that not much would be required of a person like wearing glass or something similar to just kind of generate the visual data that we'd want to be working with. So it's essentially be talking about a wearable camera that could even that wouldn't require much effort at all. I mean, I suppose it would have to be turned on, and someone would have to be told to wear it or get used to wearing it, be in the habit of turning it on and wearing it, which I think that's something possible. You mentioned the life alert. I guess they're called life alert here that elderly will typically wear. People typically wear reading glasses and things like that. So if someone can really be in the habit of wearing it, and just the recording will just start at any time that they're on. For instance, I believe that's how the narrative Miimoto camera is designed to work. It'll shut off during periods of inactivity, but I think there's an accelerometer in there to kind of kick it on when someone starts moving around again. Just a very effortless, seamless kind of thing. If we get into the idea of like augmented reality, then I think there's a lot of possibilities, particularly around like prompting, reminders, mapping, safety and security. So giving directions to someone to try to get home. I've seen a few really fascinating things, like with using augmented reality combined with mapping to guide people. So there's an app in from Japan that will use little computer-generated penguins to guide someone to a zoo. That's sort of a tourist application, and I know that's been linked to at the on the Hacking Alzheimer's page. I put a post up about that. So then what the second part of the app is, looking at it. Who's going to look at this? How can that be used? And again, that's something that you could record throughout the day and sort of playback throughout the night. In just either a screensaver mode or use time to find something specific, or use place to find something specific, and just really simple searchable tools, like, you know, turning the hands of a clock back to get back to where you were at, or retracing your steps on a map to see what happened when you went here. And, you know, another thing that would be, in my opinion, would be great, and then maybe this can segue a little bit into, you know, some of the surveillance type of issues we might want to discuss, but, you know, having facial recognition ability to, you know, that would be something I think that, that could be wonderful for elderly patients, or almost even anyone that, that has difficulty seeing a face and being able to remember who that is, you know, if it's someone familiar to you.
You know, like seeing a face and then it takes you back to the last time you saw that person or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a big help. That's something that, that right off the bat people find incredibly frightening and perhaps dystopian, or however you want to describe it, but I'm not sure if it's, you know, you can think about benefits and you can think about abuses of that, but you know, but it, in terms of sort of a medical cognitive assistant device, you know, I think that is a positive technology to have available. So, and you know, Glass will not support apps that that use facial recognition, which is something that's been reported and that you might be aware of. So,
yeah, and I don't know how long we can go here. I've got to drive up to Abu Dhabi tonight. It's about an hour and a half away. But still, I've got you've raised the interesting surveillance issues, and of course, I suppose those issues are that people are wearing glasses and recording things, and people can get upset about that. It's not very accepted. Is it? Of course, in a an environment of a caregiving facility, that wouldn't probably be a problem. But how do you see the issues impacting the work that you're doing and considering doing?
Well, one way that, I mean, one very simple way I think that they can kind of handle, you know, these issues is, you know, these don't have to be permanent records. I mean, they can be set to expire or delete, you know, after they've sort of lived out their usefulness, because you know, it might be helpful to say, what was I doing a year ago at this time, or 6 months ago? But you know, eventually you're gonna have so much that you know, the question is, do you need to manage this? Do you need to have it around, or is maybe a week or two or a day sufficient, particularly for you know, the short-term memory loss that's associated with Alzheimer's. So, so the question, you know, I have is, you know, is it still? I mean, is it offensive to be recorded or have a recording made of you if you know that it's going to disappear or perhaps not even be seen? And I think, you know, so this is the way surveillance cameras kind of operate now. A lot of that footage of a street camera, you know, mounted somewhere looking at a city street, you know, there has to be someone looking at it. So, you know, so the abuse of that information actually has to occur before it's something that is objectionable, I suppose, if that makes any sense. So.
Yeah, I guess attitudes are changing as well, you know. Do you see any indication of that
No, I mean, Glass isn't even out yet, but that's what people are really anticipating, aren't they? I mean, they're anticipating the, what, hang on, you can't just be wearing glasses and we don't know what you're doing. Is that, that's kind of where it's at right now, isn't it?
Well, right, but, you know, I think people have to see the positive effects and then, you know, then to kind of take the fear away, but, you know, the same thing has happened with any type of camera, you know, going back through history. So, you know, there's great articles from around 100 years ago of all the, I think they were called, you know, labeled in the press like Kodakers or something as kind of this menace, which were just people who bought the Kodak camera and, you know, the earliest types of shutterbugs. So, you know, it is a question of moving this ability of surveillance or whatever you want to call it to, you know, giving it to people to have their own autonomy over it. You know, if Alex were here, I'm sure he'd have some comments on that because it's very much what he's, you know, into and how we connected on these things. But you know, there's like always a period of fear that just kind of melts away after, you know, you realize like your cell phone or things you have, people aren't, you know, people develop standards of behavior that just, I think, kind of develop naturally and then that kind of fear goes away. I mean, of course, there'll be outliers and different people that want to do different things, but it's not a reason to say, you know, to start issuing bans of, you know, because we're already doing all these things. I mean, it's not a question of, like, do people own a lot of cameras? Are there a lot of cameras in the world? You know, of course there are. So, you know, Google is just kind of moving the device, which is, you know, just a $10 piece of equipment and moving it from something that's in your pocket that is not kind of readily accessible all the time to something that's easier to use and have in the place that you actually need it. I mean, it only makes sense that a camera is most useful, you know, nearer to what you actually see. So, you know, I think it's exciting. And, you know, for years, you know, photographers have had that desire of, like, wanting to be the fly on the wall, wanting to be the invisible, you know, person in the situation. So, you know, take that for what you will. You know, if you kind of object to the entire history of visual culture, then maybe you're going to have a problem, you know, with a device like Glass. But to me, it's just kind of a small question of degree. It's just a matter of inches and feet, you know. So, you know, why have your cell phone in your pocket when there might be something that happens in front of you and you want to get a picture of it right then? So have the camera in a place where it's going to be more useful is what I say.
Well, I'd like to welcome Maisie. Maisie, you've missed it by an hour as well. But, you know, you mentioned it. You wish Alex were here. I wish he were, too, because I was really, I'd really like to, you know, both of you are really in the know about this topic, and Alex has been with us several times over the past few years, and maybe we could bring you back and get Alex, once he's recovered from his surgery, because he's having that in 11 days, he said, and get you guys to really talk deeply about this topic. It's incredibly interesting. I know I've followed his conference attendances, and I've listened to some of the podcasts that he and Katina Michael and some other people have produced. You know, I can't remember all the names, but still, it's fascinating issues about well, which carrying around a GPS that would take that's for example something that's gained acceptance. A lot of people are now allowing their devices to tell software where they are, which is something that you might think twice about.
Getting a use out of it, you know, because mm-hmm. they're getting a benefit, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And as a photographer, yeah, I can really see that, you know, there's so many times that, oh, that's a neat picture. Get your camera out, bring it up, focus it. Oh, wait a minute. I cut it on my glass. Oh, wow, cool. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that would be wonderful, and hopefully in another 6 months or so we'll have some practical field experiences out there. That's kind of the next step that I'm hoping to take is to get some things out there and try them out with the the people I'm interested in trying to help. So
yeah, well, thanks a lot for coming on and discussing it with us and introducing us to the topic or bringing us up to date. And I'm sure that it would be great to get the two of you back, and you and Alex. And toward this time, we run these sessions as long as people talk, and the recording is going. It's being recorded. Of course, the YouTube recording will be available as soon as we stop. And I also make an MP3 of it and put it on our learningtogether.net blog. So you'll find an archive of what we're doing here. And I always like to be sure people who listen to these recordings know the date, because that's something that's missing from a lot of them. So this is the 24th of November, 2013. We're talking with Andy Kropa, and we were hoping to talk with Alexander Hayes, who broke his shoulder and apparently has set himself to sleep because it's late in Australia right now. Anybody else have any questions you'd like to ask Andy? Or any final comments, Andy?
No questions, just to thank you, Andy. Really enjoyed it. And as I wrote in the text chat, to actually take something like Google Glass, which a lot of people are going to see as outright threatening, and to flip that and to make it appear as something that might be socially useful in a context that no one can deny, it's going to be a really, a very positive ethical thing to do. So you've got me thinking hard. Thank you.
One really positive thing is that the policemen won't be able to hit you with their truncheons or taser you or stop and frisk you, without good cause if you're recording everything. So that's the surveillance part of it.
Well, we may have two versions of recordings from both perspectives. So, but I would also like to thank you, Vance, of course, for hosting this, and thank everyone for being on here and having such an active chat here on the sidebar that has been very informative too, and really enjoyed the opportunity to talk about this.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much, and we'll have you back for sure.
All right.
Okay, night. Thanks again.
Bye.